Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, the podcast. Check the guys out live weekday mornings from 6 to 10 Eastern on ESPN Radio.
This is Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, presented by Progressive Insurance, all phone guests on the Goodyear Hotline. And then there's Dan Graziano, who's going to stick around DG in studio because he gave us talk so straight. We couldn't even believe it. That was some straight talk in the last segment. And listen to the suggestion here. And I'm such an idiot about this. It never even occurred to me because, well, he already has a starting quarterback job, right? When we're talking about who the Saints, if and who they should target to play quarterback, Dan brought up Teddy Bridgewater, who was 5-0 with the Saints. If anything, their defense has gotten better since then, Dan.
He spent 2 years there, right? I mean, look, when you give Jameis Winston the job out of camp this year, part of the reason you feel comfortable doing it is he spent last year learning and practicing in the offense. Sean Payton's offense is not an easy one for someone to come in and pick up right away. You bring in somebody who doesn't know it, you're going to have to spend some time teaching them. This guy knows it. Obviously, his team's in sell mode. My understanding is of the trade that sent him from Carolina to Denver is Carolina paid all but $3 million of his salary. So when you think about what it would cost financially to bring him in, a little more than half of that with a little more than half the season left, to me it makes sense. I don't know why, if you're the Saints, you wouldn't at least make the phone call and find out if you can get him.
Yeah, when he left to the Carolina Panthers, it wasn't because of the ability to play. It was the ability to get paid. He hadn't had a payday since drafted to the Minnesota Vikings. So, Dan, when you brought that up, when he left the Saints to go to Carolina, it was a money play more so than it was his ability to get. Plus, they had Drew Brees, and he didn't want to sit around when it was time to get paid. But if you brought this up, Dan, it wasn't something that even dawned on me. But now that I'm thinking and I'm sitting around and I'm thinking about it, I'm like, Denver is selling everything. So why not? You get another look at Drew Lock if that's what you want. But certainly, if I'm the New Orleans Saints, if I'm Teddy Bridgewater and his representatives, I'm on the phone. Say, Sean, man, I love you, dog. I miss you. Can you please bring me back? I'm doing all that.
Dan, what do you think the ceiling is with Teddy Bridgewater if the Saints were to get him?
It's different from what you have with Jameis Winston because he's not going to push the ball down the field like you can with Winston. But they weren't doing a lot of that with Jameis anyway, right? I mean, Teddy can operate the offense in a way that I think would be beneficial to them as they lean on their very good defense and Alvin Kamara and Key's nephew if he ever shows back up and all that kind of stuff. So I think it's you know what you have, what the ceiling – I mean – you know, I don't think the ceiling's much higher than what they have now, but I think it's a little higher than what you can do with Taysom Hill, if only because it allows you to keep Taysom Hill in that sort of valuable Taysom Hill role that he plays.
Meantime, yeah, from Bridgewater's...
If he shows up.
Why you say you didn't know when?
I'm talking about Michael Thomas now.
For some information.
Keyshawn's nephew, Michael Thomas, all-world receiver.
Giving me something, yeah.
But from Bridgewater's point of view, as Key brought up, Bridgewater's a guy who in a parallel universe is a franchise quarterback somewhere, right? But the way his career panned out, they didn't give him too much to do early, which was smart. He was having some success. He was winning games. Then he gets hurt. He never quite gets a team again. He finally goes, as Key said, for the payday. He wants to get paid. Has a bad season in Carolina. Right. Follows it up with a losing season in Denver. Yeah. To go back to the Saints is be a godsend for him.
I think so. And to the question of the ceiling, right? Like, we've seen it. He had the opportunity. Carolina was his, and he had a good supporting cast, and obviously McCaffrey got hurt. That didn't help anything, but still good receivers and everything. And go to Denver. They have an excellent supporting cast around him on that offense. Hasn't done a lot there. I think we know what kind of player he is. He's not. It's not like you're not bringing in Aaron Rodgers. You know, you're not bringing in Russell Wilson. You're bringing in a guy that can manage your offense, and if you're good otherwise, I think you could win games. So, to me, it makes sense to at least find out. I don't know if Denver would do it. I have no indication that they're interested in doing it. I know they like Teddy Bridgewater a lot there, but they just traded their franchise icon pass rusher yesterday, so it would seem like anything's
on the table. What do you think it would take to get him?
That's a good question. I mean, I don't know. A quarterback in season, if you're Denver, you feel like you could probably hold them up for something real good because you know how desperate they are. Yeah, what do you trade a starting quarterback for in season? Probably better than the 2 and 3 you got for Von Miller, right?
Well, the last time I saw this happen was, ironically, Teddy Bridgewater. It was Sam Bradford for Teddy Bridgewater to replace him when he tore his ACL when he was with the Minnesota Vikings.
Right,
and the Philadelphia Eagles got Minnesota's 1. So that's a good starting point.
That is true. That,
then the Saints have to do a calculation.
Yes.
Right.
Does Bridgewater give them a first-round pick premium
right.
over what they already have, which is competent, right?
Don't
they?
Yeah, I wouldn't.
If it's going to cost you one, you probably
wouldn't do it. Right, Dan?
I wouldn't think so. I mean, because they're sitting there. They're 5-2. They're pretty good. Like, if you're the Saints, do you see yourselves as, hey, we can win this year's Super Bowl?
I think a little more of Bridgewater. Like, at the time, it made sense for them to move on from Bridgewater because he was going to be expensive, and they had a guy who could approximate him, yeah. Dan, as a backup.
You want to go somewhere and start, right?
Sure.
No, on top of that, though, Dan, a lot of people don't even realize that Trevor Siemian, the Bucs didn't prepare for him. They didn't prepare for him. All of a sudden, Trevor Siemian's in the game. It's like, well, what type of quarterback is this? Okay, here's what he is. 2-3 weeks from now, people are going to prepare for him.
Yeah.
There's no question. That success, that mild success he had against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers will be different 3 weeks from now.
Yeah. I mean, everybody knows that if you're unprepared for Trevor Siemian, you know, that then, you know, hell will rain down on you. Like, to Siemian, you know, you got to prepare for that. Look, I mean, look, he's a backup. I think they can probably win a couple games with him. But
exactly.
A backup, is, even a good backup, is someone you can count on for a couple of games and then probably not sustained production over the course of, say, half a season.
Let's back up again to the premium Bridgewater might offer here. When he originally left, it was for the money. And from the Saints' point of view, from Sean Payton's point of view, he's thinking, okay, Bridgewater as a backup, it's not worth the amount of money we'd have to pay him to keep him on the roster as a backup quarterback, right? But now, as a starter, it's more valuable. A little bit better is more valuable if you think you might be ready to win a Super Bowl, right?
You don't have to pay him. Again, you're going to pay him like 1.6 for the rest of this year if you acquire him right now.
I mean, in draft pick capital.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So, but I mean, you know, look, I mean, we're down. Way down a hypothetical road here, by the way, right? I haven't any indication that either of these teams is considering
such a good
this
idea,
move.
Though.
It's just a really good idea. So now we're hypothetically saying, what would it cost? And if the answer happens to be a first-round pick, that's a very difficult thing for teams
you
to
know
part
what?
With.
Chris Mortensen, ESPN NFL Insider, of course, on the 6 o'clock Sports Center yesterday, has another name that should be in consideration for the Saints in a few weeks. Listen.
Now, Rivers, I had some contact with him. He has kept the window cracked. He had a successful season that finished Friday night at St. Michael's, but he would not speak to the Saints out of respect to Jameis and that injury situation. And he is in shape. The window is cracked open. I would note, for things to be right, it would have to be a playoff team, a good coach, and geographically friendly. He lives near Mobile, Alabama. I checked. It's a 2-hour and 15-minute drive to New Orleans. So nothing will happen right now, but 2 or 3 weeks down the line, if something's just not right with that quarterback situation with the Saints, I think Phillip Rivers has to be in consideration and keep an eye on that one. And Cam Newton certainly can't be ruled out.
Like Mort is a reporter, right? He's getting into the map quest of it all. Like, right? Like, I'm going to find out how far Mobile is from New Orleans. Yeah, look, it's...
I can't do Phillip Rivers, man.
Why not?
Just because he's a statue in the pocket. Yeah. Like, I watched them a ton.
Jameis Winston running around a whole
bunch? No, but I mean, at least the optionality of being more mobile. And I feel Phillip Rivers because the talent, I see what he was able to do. But I also watching him with the Colts, like he just was a standstill target. It was just
it's the remains of Phillip Rivers at this time.
You need to have a really strong offensive line, but the Saints believe they do. And yeah, I mean, it could work. I mean, the key thing to remember is we're talking about all imperfect options, right? None of these guys are going to be your first choice. If you're the Saints, your first choice just got hurt. So there's going to be a flaw or two with whoever you decide to bring
Key, in. What do you think about Phillip Rivers as a possibility? I mean, there's a reason he retired, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
I like him. He's cool and all that, and I know he's one of the top quarterbacks to ever play in a game, and he deserves an opportunity, and we love him, and he could have been good on TV, and no, man, just stay coaching. We don't need to see that. Hey, Dan, when has that ever worked out, though? Guy retires, chills for like half the season, comes back, and then it never works.
All I can think is like Roger Clemens. But that's a different
sport.
Yeah.
But, you know, when guys like Jim Palmer were like, I'm going to make a comeback, it's like, Jim, there's a reason that you, speaking of baseball, there's a reason you retired in the first place because you weren't as good anymore.
All the former football players I work with always tell me, once you're retired, you're retired.
Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max is brought to you by DraftKings. Sign up with DraftKings, the official daily fantasy partner of the NFL, and use code KJM to get a free shot at millions of dollars in prizes up for grabs this week with your first deposit. Minimum $5 deposit required. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. And this time I mean it. Thank you, Dan.
All right, I'm out of here.
Appreciate
Thank you.
It.
Thanks, Dan.
Thanks a lot.
We had Key's real rankings, but there are rankings we'll see today that have a much realer impact.
Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, the podcast.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Have you ridden an electric e-bike yet? You need to check out Electric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to spend more time exploring outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range or up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus, Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting electricebikes.com. That's L-E-C-T-R-I-C ebikes.com.
The college football playoff top 25 to be revealed for the first time this season. Tonight, 7 p.m. Eastern on ESPN. And Paul Feinbaum joins us on the Goodyear Hotline. Good morning, Paul.
Paulie.
Hello, everybody. How's everybody doing?
Well, we're doing good now that we got you here. Who's in the top four right now, Paul? Who's in your top four?
You start with Georgia. That's not in dispute. And after that, I would put Alabama next. I don't think this committee will, Max. I think you'll see either Cincinnati, Michigan State, or Alabama, some combination of that. I think the most interesting school tonight is Cincinnati. They have that one big win at Notre Dame. They play clearly in a subpar conference compared to the big boys. But they have not lost a regular season game in 2 years, and they have the public support. Whether that means anything to these 13 people on the committee, I don't know.
All right, Paul, that's yours. But yeah, I know that you and the committee think differently at times. What do you think the committee, what do you think their top four will be?
Yeah, I think after Georgia at number one, my guess is Michigan State because they've had a very impressive run. Probably Cincinnati and Alabama. They value what happens on the field, and we all know Alabama's lost. The confusing thing, I will say this, Jay Will, right now, is do not under any circumstance get too hung up on what you see tonight. I realize it's the first reveal, and it's very important, and we're all excited. However, there are a lot of games left that will matter a great deal, especially for a school like Ohio State, who lost earlier in the season to Oregon, but still has Michigan State on November 20th and Michigan at the end of the month. And those are powerful games in terms of improving their resume. It's also going to be interesting to see how the committee divvies up Oregon in Ohio State. Remember, they met second week of the season. Oregon won the game. Even though I think right now, and I hope our later guest isn't listening, that Ohio State probably is trending in a better direction than Oregon, the committee likely will value what happened on the field, which is understandable.
Paul, what does Cincinnati need to be in tonight's ranking to have a legitimate shot at the college football playoff? We know they beat Notre Dame, right? And then from there, you kind of got to find something and put it together to make a case.
And it's hard to do, Keyshawn. If they are at the number four position, I would be very concerned because I think they're going to move down. If they're number two or three, then they can breathe a little bit easier. Their problem is the schedule. They have SMU in 3 weeks. That is a good game if you're a football junkie, but if you're sitting there watching at a bar in Manhattan, you're going, like, what kind of garbage is that? I'm not, get that off my TV. And seriously, SMU lost over the weekend, which, you know, again, the same guy in the bar didn't see because they were playing Houston. But the committee pays attention to all this wonkiness. So I think if they're below three, they're in trouble.
Paul, I've been hearing Mel Tucker's name a lot more now associated with, you know, all these different schools that are looking for jobs. Like, where do you think – I'm not trying to take him away from Michigan State right now, but – are you hearing the same? Is there that same excitement about Mel Tucker?
Yes. And what's interesting, 3 weeks ago when Mel Tucker's name came up, a lot of people are shaking their head going, who's Mel Tucker? He's moved jobs. He was an assistant under Saban and then Kirby Smart. And then he went to Colorado for a year. And then he went to Michigan State. But that was a signature win the other day. And I think what it's done is it makes it easier for him to be hired at LSU, and he's clearly near or at the top of that list. I also think it puts a lot more pressure on the people in East Lansing to keep him. A win like that, and suddenly you call the big boosters, the guys that own the food chains and everything else, and go, hey, we need money to keep this guy here. And the fact that he just beat Jim Harbaugh makes it easier, I think, to make that happen.
Paul, we have Mario Cristobal on the show at 9:45 a.m. this morning. Where do you think Oregon will be ranked in tonight's rankings?
I think they'll be probably fifth or sixth. And they lost one game in overtime at Stanford, but they have one of the two or three best wins of the year in college. Let me correct myself. I think they may have the best win of the year in college football going to the horseshoe and beating Ohio State. And I will say this about Mario Cristobal. For those who don't know much about him, he is a superb coach. He's a great recruiter. He was at Alabama for a number of years under Nick Saban, and they love him in Tuscaloosa. Well, I say that because you're always looking ahead as who could end up taking Nick Saban's place whenever he leaves. Mario Cristobal would be very much on the top of that list right now. Now, the question is, his name comes up for every job. It came up for SC a couple of weeks ago, as you guys remember. I think he is in a great spot at Oregon. I don't think he'll leave right now, but he is going to, he is and will continue to be one of the hottest coaches in the country.
Paul, you run the SEC. You got all the information. You know where the bones are buried down in that country and that land. What did you make of Dan Mullen's comments that he won't talk about recruiting outside of the recruiting season for whatever strange reasons? And when you think about it, could his job be in jeopardy at Florida?
Keyshawn, I thought it was one of the most foolish comments I've heard from a big-time coach in a long time. And so for a little bit of context here, Dan Mullen has done a good job at Florida. He played in the SEC championship game last year. He nearly won against Alabama this year in September. But he has been unable to recruit at the same level as Kirby Smart at Georgia and Saban and even Coach O at LSU. And it has baffled people. This is a guy that coached Tim Tebow. He coached Alex Smith earlier in his career. He pretty much turned Dak Prescott into a no-name at Mississippi State, and we all know what Dak is today. But, you know, I can't quite explain it. There are a lot of theories on all this. So what happened the other day, to getting to your question, Kirby Smart, after the Georgia beatdown of Florida, was asked about recruiting, and he said, listen, that's the most important thing you have to do. It pains me to leave my family, but I have to go out there and recruit nonstop so we can have the kind of players that you saw here today. Dan Mullen was asked about recruiting on Monday, and he said, we don't talk about recruiting during the season. We'll talk about it afterwards. He was essentially saying, I don't want to talk about it right now because I know the next question is, how come you're getting your brains beat in by Kirby Smart on the recruiting trail? But it was an inarticulate answer. Everyone knows recruiting never ends. I mean, Keyshawn, the great coaches don't ever take a day off on recruiting. You can't. And And Dan Mullen just sent the wrong message out at the wrong time. He has had top 10 classes, but he's never broken through the upper echelon. But what's interesting is you can finish 10th or 11th in the nation in recruiting on recruiting day. And you know where that puts you in the SEC? Fourth or fifth. And that's not good enough. And back to your final question, you know, is his job in jeopardy? I don't think so. He'll do the usual, fire the defensive coordinator and make other staff changes. But he is veering, he's trending in the wrong direction down there, and that is a premier job.
Speaking of firing and all that and having that conversation, we are now in the month of November, so we know how that starts and heads start to roll, right? Jim Harbaugh, he just can't seem to beat his rivals. Now, all of a sudden, Mel Tucker is 2-0 against the Michigan Wolverines since taking over Michigan State's program. We know the record against Ohio State. Where is he at the end of the season? Is he still in Michigan, Paul, or is he looking for another job, possibly back into the NFL?
Well, I think if he's not looking for another job, he's foolish. And I don't think Jim is foolish. I would be hesitant to bury him yet, Keyshawn, but I'd grab a shovel just in case. And here's why. He still has Penn State. That game is in State College. Penn State's very capable of beating Michigan. And then the end of the year game at home against Ohio State. And if he doesn't win either one of those games, even though his record may be okay, 8-4, 9-3, that's really not enough to satisfy people. He was hired to beat Ohio State, and he's been unable to do that. And he really can't even beat Michigan State, which should not be a rival. Not to start an in-state feud, but Michigan State, shouldn't they be Michigan's little brother? But they're not. And it's a real issue. And I'm hesitant to pull the trigger on him too quickly, even though I think I fired him back in August before the season started on this show. But, yeah, he's going to have to beat Ohio State to save this season. And right now, I wouldn't bet on that.
Yeah, Michigan State with a running back, Kenneth Walker, the third, 5 TDs and 193 yards. Can't beat the in-state rival, the great Paul Feinbaum. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you, Paul. Talk to you next week. Always great to hear from you.
All right, Paulie.
Thank you, Max. See you guys.
All right, Paul Feinbaum is brought to you by Dr. Pepper. College football's heating up and fans are hyped. Crack open an ice-cold Dr. Pepper, slap on a fresh coat of face paint, and return to glory with an all-new season of Fansville. Buy Dr. Pepper, the one fans deserve. A Monday night win. But was it convincing enough? Jeff Saturday on Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max. Presented by Progressive Insurance. You can save big when you bundle. Let's try that again. Key knows every day around 7:30 it happens to me. Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, presented by Progressive Insurance. You could save big when you bundle your auto, home, motorcycle, RV, or boat. Visit progressive.com. And Jeff Saturday indeed joins us, giving the Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. No contract, no compromise. Jeff, your takeaway from the Chiefs' win over the Giants?
It was a must win. Listen, and they got it. It ain't pretty. It's like in my golf game. They don't draw pictures, right? The score is what it is, and I love that. And in football, it's no different. They had to have that. They're about to go through a gauntlet in their schedule. They got the Packers, the Raiders, and the Cowboys. They had to have this one. They went out and got it. And here's the key for me. I feel like the Chiefs are stubborn right now, right? When you're watching the game, they're not allowing the game to come to them. They're trying to force everything. You're watching Mahomes get pushed out of the pocket early, and he's not effective. I think he was 4 of 13 yesterday outside the pocket. He's thrown 6 interceptions outside the pocket this season alone. He had 5 all in his career before this. So teams are making him move. They're making him uncomfortable, not allowing him to hit big shots down the field. But man, run the football. And listen, I know I'm an O lineman, and everybody thinks, you know, all he cares about is O line. But there's something about being able to turn around and hand the ball off and feel comfortable you're going to gain yards. And they were gaining them last night, and they would get away from it. So it was dumbfounding to me. And that goes back to coaching from Andy Reid's perspective. Like, you got to trust what's happening and how you're being effective. And by the way, that helps your defense as well. They just got to stop being stubborn.
Should we just believe that this is who they are?
Yes.
This is who they are. Is this a team that can make the playoffs?
Absolutely they can. But they have to do it in this way. Here's the problem for the Chiefs. If you look at the Chiefs, penalties were a nightmare last night. Well, they have 14 penalties.
Same
something
for the
stupid,
Giants, yeah.
Right? I mean, it's an awful night, right? Then you have the turnovers, poorly done, can't turn the ball over, right? So If they minimize their mistakes, this is what the typical NFL football team faces. But the difference with the Chiefs is, you know, they have that extra gear in them, but you have to allow those plays to come. Listen, in Indy, we went through a phase where we were scoring a ton of points. And then all of a sudden, we started turning the ball over. We weren't doing what we were supposed to. Defenses were playing us a little different, which is what's happening with the Chiefs as well. Too high safeties and kind of making it look murky for quarterbacks, right? So not all the big plays were coming. You got to settle down. Settle into what most NFL teams face, which are last-minute wins, be okay with a 20-17 victory over an ugly team, and be good with it, bro, because it's a freaking W. Mm. Go on and be happy with it.
Jeff, you know, you're close to that situation in Indy, clearly, because you are one of the greats in Indianapolis Colts history. But what the hell happened to Carson Wentz with about 2 minutes left of that game? He went from having a decent game to looking like he forgot how to play football at the end of that game against the Titans.
Cost him the game, Key. You know what I mean? Cost him the game. Like you know, we can always – we always talk about, like, there's four or five plays in a game that ultimately decide the game. Well, those two from your quarterback cost you. You can't be backed up on a screen play, which is an easy dump off or an easy get rid of, right? It's a bailout play. It's a bailout call and play. So, you know, if it doesn't work, you know, protect yourself. Don't do something stupid. He does something stupid. But then in overtime, it's even worse. Like, I'm just telling you, the overtime interception to me was the most it was one of the most frustrating things I've seen. He clearly has Jonathan Taylor over the middle wide open, and there's not anybody within 15 yards, and he tries to force it into triple coverage on the back end. Like go you don't need to be a hero. Like, your team is better than Tennessee at that moment. You can go win this game, but instead you try to force something in and you cost your team the game. Don't be the hero. Like Carson, we don't need a hero in Indy. You know, offensive line, defense is very good. We can win that way. You are costing the team, not helping them in those two plays on Sunday.
So now there's no Derrick Henry. He's out. Obviously, Adrian Peterson comes over for them, but yeah. How much more pressure does this put on Frank Reich and Carson Wentz?
Oh, huge. I mean, listen, like now there's an opportunity, right? Because Derrick Henry is now out of your division. There's three games up on you, but you're trying to make the playoffs at this point, right? You're going to have to go 7-2 probably the rest of your games. So if you're Frank, there, you know, you better hit the accelerator. Like, otherwise it's over. Because this one right here was a nail in the coffin, losing this game when you had it, when you should have won this game. This is the one they'll go back on. If they don't make the playoffs, and they'll kick themselves for this game.
Yeah, it's a killer to lose Derrick Henry, but the Colts. Carson Wentz, a fatally flawed quarterback. I hate to say it, he's a fatally flawed quarterback.
He is not. He's played well.
Look what just happened.
I mean,
He played well. Look what just happened. Season on the line.
I can't defend it. I wish I could because he has been playing decent. Those two. And again, man, like, as an offensive line and a defense, like, when you walk to the sideline and you're like, dude, did you bump your freaking head? Like, what are you even thinking? Putting the ball in your left hand, trying to throw, like, even if you throw it, like, your running back is literally chopping the backside in. So there's nobody over there either. Like, I don't even know what you're thinking. Y'all
he
about
wasn't
to get me turned
thinking,
up this one.
Yeah.
I'm
getting ticked off.
That's the problem. And that's the great Jeff Saturday, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you, Jeff.
Appreciate
as always.
Y'all.
Why Key thinks the Chiefs are not done just yet. That's next. Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max on ESPN Radio and ESPN2.
The Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max Podcast.
We all know breakfast is an important part of your day. But sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any. You know what happens? You grab a cup of coffee and skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, and waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Chiefs get a win on Monday Night Football. It was not a convincing win. We know they don't cover the spread very often.
Never.
But that was close call against the Giants team that's not exactly setting the world on fire. And now the Chiefs play the Packers, Raiders, and Cowboys in the next 3 weeks. So, Key, what adjustments on the field do you need to see from the Chiefs? You were talking earlier in the show, you know, people are, you know, teams are adjusting. They need to adjust. So what adjustments do they need to make if they're going to get back in the playoff hunt?
Well, I think they just got to take a look at self-check, right? What are we doing that's good? And clearly keeping the ball, you know, 5, 6, 7 yards from the line of scrimmage is what they do well right now. Pushing the ball down the field is not what they do. And I think Andy Reid and Eric Bieniemy, who is the primary play caller, will go and make that adjustment, and they'll be fine moving forward.
What about from a personnel standpoint? Should the Chiefs – look, the trade deadline is 8 hours and 14 minutes and 30 seconds from right now. Should the Chiefs consider Odell Beckham Jr. today – in a trade?
I think, you know, I think it's more about what they're doing on the field than the actual personnel. OBJ is a sexy name. There's no question about it. He can certainly help a lot of football teams because he has a lot of talent that is being wasted right now in Cleveland for whatever weird reasons that is. You got to think about the economic side of it. But there's also a guy in Miami in Devontae Parker, the Miami Dolphins. Maybe they look at them. They're 1-8. So you start to look at all the wholesale changes potentially for teams that's out there. Those are two guys, if I'm looking at a wide receiver and I'm looking at that position, that I may want to add to my team to get that value going forward. And OBJ is certainly a player that if I'm the Cleveland Browns, I'm not sending him to the AFC in the Kansas City Chiefs, a team that I'm trying to catch. I'll be a damn fool to trade OBJ to the Kansas City Chiefs. Devontae Parker, different situation. The Miami Dolphins got a long ways to go to catch the Kansas City Chiefs. The Cleveland Browns are right there. So if I'm Cleveland, I'm not sending OBJ to the Kansas City Chiefs, and I got to see him or he's in the way of me every single year when I'm trying to make a run into the playoffs.
Jay Will, you brought up several weeks ago Sammy Watkins not being on Kansas City is kind of an underrated, kind of under-the-radar sneaky reason maybe why they don't have that third incredible receiving target. Apologies, Mecole Hardman, who did some work last night.
Wait, well,
what about OBJ to the Chiefs from your point of view?
I mean, I hear exactly what Key's point is, trading them in the conference. I just – something about seeing OBJ with Travis Kelce, with Tyreek Hill, and how they play, having the optionality. Like, Patrick Mahomes – and look, I'm in complete agreement with it, right? And when you watch the Giants playing 15-plus yards off the ball, right, you can't beat them over the top. And those underneath routes, it just felt like Patrick Mahomes wasn't just disciplined, right? Like, there is that Houdini about him where he wants to go for the significant play, but just staying disciplined. I feel like having a third option that can draw attention like OBJ just continues to open up the playbooks. But there is a discipline level to this, Key, for Patrick Mahomes in order to find that again, because it does feel like watching him, he presses a ton. And just last night you saw it, pressing and pressing and pressing instead of just taking what was right there. I can't tell you how many times Eli and Peyton pointed it out during the broadcast.
Well, I mean, if the defense knows that here are his top two options and you don't have a spectacular – look at Tom Brady and the Bucks. They got a million spectacular options, right? Baker Mayfield, speaking of Odell Beckham, was asked at the post-game presser, the Browns post-game presser, about the fact that only one target went to Odell. Listen to his response.
I want to hear this.
I mean, like I said, they did some, you know, their base foundation scheme-wise. We, you know, we have to find ways to format it and get the ball in his hands. You know, we're not trying to force it to anybody. We have a talented skill group, so I just have to continue to go through my reads and do that. But, yeah, we can do a better job of getting the ball in his hands, getting him going early and fixing that, yeah.
Yeah, ain't none of that. Baker, you cool and everything, and we can format it, and we can do all this and that. No, man, the ball is in your damn hands. It's your responsibility to get to do the ball. He's the best wide receiver y'all got. There's no rhyme or reason whatsoever that OBJ is not getting the opportunities to use his talent. I understand that he had a few drops a week ago, or he had a shoulder injury that, you know, kind of helped some of the drops. He got in the way of some of those drops. But at the end of the day, You are the quarterback. You got to get that dude the ball. That's just ain't nothing else to be talked about. I don't want to hear nothing about we need to do figure it out in a better way. No. Number 13 is on the field. Get him the damn ball,
this
man.
That's really it.
There's nothing else to talk about that. I don't want to hear Baker Mayfield sit up there and try to explain to me and explain to the world, oh, we got to go through certain formations. We got to do certain things, Jay. We're not doing it. Get the dude the damn ball, man. In order to be successful, that's why he's there, because he's a talent.
And you know what's happening too, Key? I was thinking about this yesterday as I was reading these articles about how livid you would be. Because now all these articles are coming out saying about, what is the trade value for OBJ? Has it diminished? And I'm sitting there saying, yo, this dude is special. He's just not being prioritized in the offense. But now people are talking about, is his trade value diminished?
Well, that's what I was about to say, is the real issue here is the Browns were foolish with the way they handled Odell, the whole Odell situation, in the sense that it was apparent for over a year now that Baker and Odell lacked chemistry. They don't seem to like each other, at least not on the field, which is sometimes an outgrowth of other things, right? The value was higher when they were, you would think, then, not when the trade deadline's approaching and every team knows they can't get anything for him because his contract is up at the end of the season. After right now. So if the Browns aren't going to get a lot from, if his value's diminished, it's not just because of what's happening on the field. It's because the way the Browns waited, they held on too long. I mean, Key, was it not obvious that these two don't sync up?
Well, you don't move a guy because you can't figure out how to make it work. You try and figure out how to make it work until such due time that you realize it's not going to work. And if I'm the Cleveland Browns, as much as I'd like to move on from Odell Beckham. Odell Beckham Jr.'s do not walk through that door when fully healthy. It's a hard replacement. Think about it. The New York Giants are still trying to replace him. It's just a hard replacement.
So where does
he go?
You
have a guy like that, what you want to do is you want to try to figure out how to make it work, because he certainly is there to help you and not hinder the process. It's up to Baker Mayfield, who's calling the plays. I understand progressions and reads. You know how many progressions and reads I've been in my career? You know how many? I was the first option and the third option, which means it was going to be 1, 2, and 3, and I wasn't taking my eyes off of him until such due time that absolutely could not throw him the football.
Do you think he will be a Cleveland Brown at 4 p.m. today?
Yeah. Yes, I do.
Do you think that's a mistake, or is that a good idea?
Well, I mean, first of all, you're asking to trade him to a team and come into a system and learn a new system in the middle of the season. That's extremely hard to do, to be able to have him out there being productive. Because one thing you cannot do is you cannot think and play. If you are thinking and trying to play, that is not going to work for you. It's just it doesn't work. I can't do that. And he won't get up to speed fast enough to help a team at the level of his skill set. We're not talking about a guy like, if you told me DeSean Jackson's on the trading block and I'm trading for DeSean Jackson, good. I'm looking for that.
Yeah.
Vertical stretch game, this is all I need you to do. OBJ is where DeSean was 10 years ago. So it's a different type of trade opposed to a guy who, hey, I'm Von Miller. All I need to do is go smell a quarterback, see ball, get ball. That's a different trade than a receiver who has got to line up, who has to block, who has a ton of responsibilities.
Will he be on the Browns after 4 p.m. today, Max? Yes, I think he will. But will he personally want to be on the Browns? I wouldn't want to be if I were OBJ. I don't think Baker Mayfield is going to be able to figure this one out. And I don't think Kevin Stefanski or management is going to help Baker Mayfield figure it out, Key.
Here's what I do know.
He wants to win, and I get that.
Here's what I do know on the OBJ front is he's not looking to move. He just wants them to figure out how he can be involved to help the team win.
Just to remind everyone how ridiculous this guy is, broke in the league. He's 22 years old. 1,300 yards, 12 TDs. 1,450 yards, 13 TDs. 1,367 yards, 10 TDs, with the remains of Eli Manning as quarterback and a bad offensive line and no running game back then. This dude is crazy. Danny Dimes and his struggles in primetime. Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, ESPN Radio, coming right up.
The Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max Podcast.